So yesterday we started talking about the fact that visual has two components to it. It has an action and it has an effect, and there seems to be room to question as to where the malacha is. Is the malacha one or other or both of them? And as we noted, it has some similarity to Zoreya as far as that's concerned, but the similarity is not absolute, because when it comes to Zoreya, the time gap is so big that we're forced to come to a unique understanding and to pick one or the other. Bishul, since it's a manageable time frame and it could be all done within Shabbos, we have the potential for such a distinction, but it's not necessarily compelling, it's not necessarily mukhra. But the biggest issue forcing the point is the Gemara in our original parak and Daf Dalet, which does give us the impression that it can be interrupted in the middle, and that if the malacha does not conclude, if the food is not actually cooked, then one would indeed be patur. So we started talking about possible differences between one or the other. We noted yesterday the issue about hasra, and we made reference as well, just to state this point a little more clearly, the Rosh Hashanah and the Chastinach, which we're familiar with from Daf Dalet, that according to the Rosh Hashanah, who assumes that Bishul and Zriya are essentially parallel, are essentially the same. So halacha l'maisa, or l'maisa, at least as far as Onshin are concerned, halacha l'maisa, if one were to put food on the oven right before Shabbos is over, and the cooking would not take place until after Shabbos, so according to the Rosh Hashanah, in that situation, you're chayiv, because it's a direct parallel to Zriya, and that's what Zriya is. You plant on Shabbos, and it finishes after Shabbos. And according to Menachas Chinuch, you'd be pater in that case, because apparently you need both. According to him, you need the placing of the food on the fire and the culmination of the process. And since that last part is not happening on Shabbos itself, so therefore you're going to be pater. So halacha l'maisa, the distinction between the Rosh Hashanah and Menachas Chinuch is an important lamdusha distinction, just in terms of trying to understand how the malachas work, but they have some real practical ramifications, or at least, again, practical as far as the realm of onshin, and that's a major one that's relevant to Bishul. The other one, if you recall, was more relevant to Zoreya, the question of if Bishul can be stopped in the middle, as we saw a few times, so can Zoreya also be stopped in the middle, and would that have the somewhat strange implication that even Motzoi Shabbos, Sunday, Monday, one has an obligation to come and undo his malacha from Shabbos and stop the seeds from taking root. So another area in which you perhaps see the unique nature of Bishul has to do with the prohibition of Hagasa. Right, so if you saw the Gemara in Maseches Beitzah, where the Gemara says that there is a prohibition associated with stirring the pot, right, which has a number of prohibitions associated with it. One is when it's used in its sense as a metaphor for controversy, that's a particular aveira, to stir the pot of machlokas. The Gemara says that hamachzik machlokas is a violation of the issur of losiyah karach v'adaso, says the Gemara in Sanhedrin. And before I should point out, it doesn't just mean the one who starts it, but whoever stirs the pot, whoever gives it more kiyum, more chizuk. So that's one usage, that's a prohibition. And then, in terms of Shabbos, it's a prohibition also in terms of an actual pot, an actual stirring. So what's the nature of that is? Why do you have such a prohibition? What's the problem with stirring the pot? Jonathan?
Make something go faster and then
visual. Oh, so that says the Eglital and others explain that this creates a hastening of the visual process. And that's a problem. The fact that the bishul is going to happen earlier, so that makes you apparently not only in violation of some type of a rabbanan, that seems to be the actual malacha, that seems to be an act of bishul itself. Parenthetically, the Eglei Tal also comments that here again, you have an interesting distinction between bishul and zriya, because the Gemara seems to say, although you have to understand this Gemara specifically the way certain Rishonim, such as Rashi and Tosfos, read it. But the Gemara says, according to those Rishonim, by Zriya, that would only be an Issa D'Rabbanan. that if you bring a plant closer to its source of nutrition, so that it'll grow faster, such as if you have a plant that's a little bit removed from the ground because it's on pegs, and it's in a pot that has holes in the bottom, and utz and tznukuv, and you move it closer into the dirt, so it's going to grow faster. So that, the Gemara says, is a problem. And the Rishonim, most Rishonim tell us it's a problem in Drabanan. So the Eglei Tal has to deal with that also. So why do we have a similar act in terms of Zriya and Bishul, and one's in Issa D'Oraisa, one's in Issa D'Rabanan? So he works off the premise, which he agrees with in general, with Menachas Chinuch's premise, that Zriya and Bishul are not the same type of malacha, and that Zriya is defined all by your initial act, and Bishul is defined by bringing it to the finish line. So therefore, when it comes to Bishul specifically, if you're going to bring it to the finish line before it would otherwise have done so, so then you're doing the malacha d'araisa. But Zriya is not that way. Now, it's confusing because there are other acts that do seem like they would be in that category, and we do treat them like they are malachas d'araisa, or at least toldos, such as watering the grass might be what some of you have on your mind. It's the question that presents itself. So apparently, and you have to be a little bit of a botanist to understand this, but apparently watering the grass is not something you do just to hasten the process. That's a crucial part of the step, which makes you mamish d'araisa. While bringing it closer to the ground, it would have grown otherwise without that, it's just going to grow quicker. So that's not considered to be an act of Zareya on a Doraisa sense.
Does that answer all the other problems for Zareya, like Zomer and stuff like that?
You have to figure it out. You have to, again, I think you have to have perhaps a little bit more botanical awareness than we have in terms of understanding why these things are different. But that seems to be essentially the point, let's say in terms of Zomer, just the example you mentioned. So I guess if the branches are such a way that it's going to stop the thing from growing, and you have to cut them out of the way so that they'll be able to grow. So maybe, yeah, maybe that's certain things you need to do in order for it to grow at all. And this is just an act of hastening the process going to happen one way or another. So apparently it's called, as a Rabbanan, I think, if I'm going in order, I think it was Shmuley Aryeh ben Yosef. Hi.
I was going to ask, if it's based on the, if it's based on the premise on the mitzvah skena, that, you know, built by the end product, and if it's cooked,
right.
If he's just stirring it, but the stirring doesn't lead to him finishing it. And let's say you do it with chilim, and before the chilim, you mix it up, but before it finishes cooking, if you can quantify that, so you take it out. So you that's still according to you, sustainable. You finish your act of bishul. So why factor anything?
You probably compare that to the case of our Gemara and the Avdalah. That you could ask the same question without Hagas. You ask the question of just the guy who puts it on the plate and on the fire in the first place. Why is he chai for anything, considering that somebody could interrupt it in the middle? And the answer is, you're right. If somebody comes and interrupts in the middle, he won't be chai. So maybe in Hagas also, that maybe it's the same kind of situation. If we say Hagas is basically a official form, so the same rule. If the person happens to be lucky that the pot was taken off before he actually allowed it to come to a full cooking, then maybe you won't be chayav. But it raises another interesting question, which I'll come to in a second if I take the other comments. Are you?
If something's fully cooked, is there also a problem of stirring?
So presumably not. We'll get to a little bit hopefully today as well.
Excuse me, without going into the Zoraya, but as a moch in and of itself, how do you get to the idea that hastening something that's already in the process should be tantamount to actually being over the Issur itself? Like, that's in itself a stretch.
Well, is it? If you think about that in general, is that necessarily the case? Especially when it comes to Shabbos, and this is a question which I think will also affect other issues that we'll talk about over the next few minutes. But in general, if we divide Issurim in general, and maybe specifically within Shabbos, but if we divide Issurim in general into result-based Issurim and Maisa-based Issurim, and we say some things are bad because you're bringing about a certain result, and some things are bad because a maisa is prohibited. So bringing about the result, you could have a certain attitude, listen, it's going to happen one way or another, so what's so terrible if I do it? Comparable to what the Gemara Bava Kamma talks about, where if something is falling from a building, and somebody drops a vase outside a building, So then if somebody else comes before it hits the ground, he takes a baseball bat and he smashes it in the air and he destroys it. So there the Gemara says, Mata Tfira Tava, that he broke a broken kli. He didn't do anything, because the second they cleared the airspace of the window, and it was definitely going to fall, so then it was already considered broken. So there, the issue we're talking about a chiyuv for nezikin. Now we're not focused on a maisa ha'isur. So you're right, that once the result is inevitable, so your role in making it happen a few seconds earlier is not significant. But if you say that it's about the maisa, so right now you have imposed a reality which wouldn't be there otherwise. It'll be there a minute later, but right now, it's not true. So especially when it comes to Shabbos, if you focus on the maisa, so you are now cooking this item. If you were not doing this, it would not be cooked until a minute later. And the hanami would be done, because if you're saying, oh, you should feel terrible because the food was cooked, in the hanami, I won't feel so terrible, it would be cooked anyway. But did it violate Shabbos by doing this? Especially, again, keeping in mind the distinction between the Isra of Shabbos as a maisa and the definition of a malacha abstractly. So yeah, you did this maisa that caused this item to be cooked. So it's interesting, kind of relevant to your question though, and relevant to Shmuley's comment as well. So there is an interesting slight nuance that we mentioned yesterday, the Sefer of Rabbi Eliyahu Silverman, where he talks about this specific question about the relationship between the maisa and the result. And he asks the following hypothetical, and he notes that there is a slight nuance in terms of how it's understood. Let's say if I put something on the fire, right? So we've already seen that if somebody comes and takes it off the fire, takes it out of the oven, so I'll be saved from the malacha. So let's say I put something on the oven, somebody comes and takes it off. Right, I put it in the oven, Reuben comes and takes it off. Then Shimon comes and puts it back on the oven, and it cooks fully. So who's chayav for that? Presumably Shimon, right? Presumably my action was finished, and it got undone, and left by itself at that point, nothing would have happened. So Shimon came and did a new act of Bishul, and it's his Bishul that was, quote-unquote, successful. So, if that's the case, so you could have also thought, well, alright, so then if I put something on the oven, and then Reuven comes and does a gossip to it, so then, if he's now chayiv alts mevashel, so when he gets to the finish line, let's say he's chayiv. But we wouldn't say like that. Right? We wouldn't assume, just logically, it's hard to imagine, that we would say that I'm off the hook because he came in the middle and did his own act of bishul on top of it.
Why can't both be chayiv for
a person? They probably can. But logically, you'd be pushed more in that direction than thinking that I'm off the hook. So there's a difference between the case where it was taken off the oven and somebody else did their own complete act of bishul, and this case where somebody came and did this hagasa act, so we perceive it as being different than a full act of bishul in that way. Right? That if somebody were to come and really superimpose his own bishul on top of my bishul, I'm kidekach that they negated my bishul, so then you could imagine I'm off the hook and he's in trouble. The hagasa doesn't seem to be in that category. So why is that? So he knows, yeah, I don't know how much of a difference this is, but perhaps it's a slight nuanced difference. But the way the Eglei Tal understands it is that essentially, which maybe what you're getting at, is that it basically becomes a joint malach. Shnayim shasu in a case where it's not an artificial case that you're putter from. So one person, you need one cook to put it on the oven, and another cook to do the hagasa, which is a separate act, but they're both parts of bringing it to its end point, and when it does get to that point, it gets so because of the maisa of both of us. So therefore, we're both chayav. While the Shvisas HaShabbos, which is an important sefer in Hilchos Shabbos, that's not as old as you might think, because it's pretty much a classic, but it's from the 20th century. So in the Shvisas HaShabbos, he writes that the reason I'm still chayav in that scenario is because really bishul essentially is all about my maisa, my initial action. And once it gets to the finish line, then I'm chayav. So I did this initial action of putting it there. and somebody else brought it closer to the finish line, but it doesn't cancel my initial maestro. Unless my initial maestro was actually canceled by somebody removing it, but it calls mine that it wasn't actually canceled. So then the same way I'm chayev, any other circumstance, I'm chayev, he's chayev, we both did something to bring it here. Which again, you could say in a way they sound almost exactly the same, but essentially the difference is that, at least the way Rabbi Silverman presents it, is that Lego Tal is seeing it as they both participated in bringing about this result, so it's a joint effort. And that the way the Shabbos is saying it's really about the Maisa putting it in. And therefore, you did a Maisa putting it in, you did the Maisa, which is considered comparable, of Hagasa. So both of you are chayav for your action, since it also ended up that it got to the conclusion. Okay, was there a question before?
This might be completely off topic, but how does this relate to Bishul Akum and Yisrael getting involved?
It might. It's an interesting question. I mean, we'll see some possible parallels in general in terms of when are they considered comparable. So you might want to hold the question in abeyance until we see some other possible applications. It's an important question in general. It's a worthwhile question to keep in mind today in general and in the near future as we consider some of these topics while you're throwing it out there. That we find that the concept of bishul has significance in a few areas of halacha. Right? So we have a prohibition of bishul on Shabbos. We have a prohibition of bishul akum. Where else do we have a prohibition of bishul? Pasul b'chalav, right? So there are at least a few areas in halacha where bishul has significance. So it's a worthwhile question to keep in mind. How exactly do we define the term in each case? Is it always defined the same way? Are there differences? Are there reasons for differences? So keep that in mind when we discuss a few more points and we'll come back to it. Yosef?
So is the issue here a question of whether or not we focus specifically on the mice itself without taking into consideration its other conditions? Or the alternative is no, the conditions are critical for understanding if the mice constitutes a mystery?
That's a little bit of a confusing sentence.
Yeah, meaning, because if you would just look at the Maisa itself, and you wouldn't take a look at the conditions, such as it has to contribute to the Bishul, so then I would say that, so regardless of whatever the outcome is going to be, whether someone took it off or not, it still be Chayiv. Because I'm just looking at
right,
the Maisa.
But that we know isn't true.
Right, so I'm saying
it could have been true by Zriya. That, whether that's true by Zriya is a Machlokes. But because of our Gemara and Daftalit, but again, that Gemara is so crucial to so many different sugyas. You know, a little half umbit is so influential. So because of that Gemara, so we know that it's not independent of what happens in the end.
Right, so the question is just meaning in the case of like hastening the act of bishul, so that the question could be whether that falls under the category of the necessary conditions.
Right.
That it's going to happen anyways, because we...
You're saying that, also you're saying that, why shouldn't we say... That's an interesting question, actually, because that may also affect... I'll also tell you to hold that question in advance, because you could ask it a little bit later, that, and I think there's an answer, but I hear where the question is coming from, that why don't we say that part of the definition of bishul should require that they need you, and if it's going to happen without you, then it shouldn't be called bishul. So let's talk about that question a little while, because I think it'll be prompted by some other points. Okay. So... another related issue is that, going back to that Gemara Maseches Beitza about Hagasa. So, I don't have the Beitza in front of me, but the Gemara has the Daf Yomi coming up pretty soon, and the Maseches is coming up pretty soon. For some reason, they shuffled up all the Maseches, so Rosh Hashanah still hasn't happened yet, but Beitza is next. So, the Gemara in Beitza talks about a number of different actions which are all related to bishul, including kindling the fire and hagasa and the like. And the Gemara says, you're chayiv for all of them. So, right, you saw this Gemara, it was on Maror Komos. So, why are you chayiv for, let's say, kindling the fire? What's the malacha there?
Havara.
Havara, right? Who says that it's Havara?
Rashi.
Right? Rashi and also the word. Sounds like pretty logical interpretation.
I kind of thought it wasn't because it was maybe Esh or something like that. Meaning, it sounds like the fire already existed and put it somewhere else. I don't know. It could be
Okay, he just thinks about that. Would that self also be Havara on Shabbos? And you have to make sure about that.
Transfer, no, not transferring as in like transferring it from one flame.
I mean, lifting the flame.
Taking like some kind of, I was thinking like some kind of portable stove where you can imagine those barbecue things, grills.
While it's on fire.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think it means that, although that's interesting.
Because I was trying to relate everything to the visual.
Oh, so we see Rashi doesn't do that. Right? Rashi over there says it's a different malach. So the Rambam, however, the Rambam lists them all as acts of Bishul, which is interesting because how is this Bishul? How is lighting a fire Bishul? So the Mekevus HaMishnah, who we'll cite probably a few times today, the Mekevus HaMishnah, it's a classic sefer in the Rambam, was written by Rav Shlomo Chaim. So despite the reputation, he was actually a very smart man. I mean, the reputation of Chaim, not his reputation. Despite the reputation that's given to Chaim, so he was a very big Talmid Chacham, and he was also very learned both in Torah and in Mada. He had a lot of secular education as well. And he wrote this classic Sefer on the Rambam. So here he understands that apparently when it comes to Bishul, so we have an extra Hagdara here, that Bishul involves all of the Tzorcha HaBishul, that everything that you do towards the end of bringing about the cooking is all included in Bishul. And to that extent, it's different from other Malachas, that it has this broader understanding to it. It's interesting, because if you want to draw a parallel, once again, in Zriya, for some reason, like we said in the past, that Zriya and Bishul seem to be these perennial foes of each other. They're always drawn back into the ring to fight with each other and to find steerers between the two of them. So it happens to be that there is another Rambam within the laws of Zareya, which could have been similar to this. That the Rambam say, remember this Rambam?
The
Menachish? No, actually, I think a different Rambam. I mean, that you could bring the Rambam as well. But I think the Rambam there told us when he, that's not Menachish. But the Rambam also says that if you take seeds and you put them in water, so you're chayiv mishum zoreh. So it's a machlokas, why that is. What is zoreh about putting seeds in water? So there, the Merkabah HaMishnah says, a different job. The Merkabah HaMishnah says that it's because, and that's how some others understand as well, he's assuming that the seeds are going to sprout in the water. So that just like the dirt can make the seeds develop, so too water can as well, and therefore that's the malacha of Zareya. And that's a whole discussion whether that's relevant to the modern day issue of hydroponics, if you can grow produce in water as they do nowadays. Is that a malacha on Shabbos or not? It's very relevant to the upcoming Shemitah year because it's a big discussion in Eretz Yisrael whether planting in hydroponics, planting in water, is considered planting that's prohibited in Shvius or not. The Vosner has a tshuva where he notes the hydroponics is more than this. It's not simply putting seeds into water. It involves putting in all kinds of nutrients there as well. It's different than what the Rambam was talking about. But in any event, so that's what some suggest of Pshat and the Rambam. But the Radbaz, in his tshuvas, the Radbaz says, you see from here, that there is a concept in the Malachos in general that a Malacha sometimes extends its position to preparatory acts. If there are acts that you need to do to prepare for the malacha, then that sometimes is also considered a part of the malacha. For Moshe Brown, I say for Tevas Moshe, and the Malachas of Shabbos, he has a whole expansion of this thought, and he talks about Zareya, he talks about where you find this principle in other malachos, that preparing for the malacha can also be considered the malacha. But here, apparently, Rekavis HaMishnah, who doesn't say that pshat here, is basically saying that maybe it's not necessarily true about all malachos, but it's true specifically about Bishul. That maybe Bishul is a type of malacha that has a unique nature to it, where the Tzorche HaBishul are all included in the malacha. Now that would make sense, specifically, if you understand that this is basically a malacha where the whole nature of the malacha is to bring about a later reality. And that if the whole point of the malacha is that you do something and something later happens, so then we could have a broader range of actions that could be included in that.
So then he would say that Zoraya would be the same. It wouldn't be just Maria Fidel, because it's also focused, maybe.
I mean, so why didn't they say the upshot in the round was that? I mean, why did the Mekarev Mishnah say that?
I mean, also, right.
So again, the truth is, although the truth is, we could still take Mechasinuch and still make this point, right? We could still say there's a difference between Zriya and Bishul. Right? Zriya will never happen in its totality on Shabbos, and therefore we have to define Zriya as putting something in the ground. That is the whole halacha. While Bishul not only could happen on Shabbos, but we still know from our Gemara that we can't ignore that it's interruptible, so we have to factor in the end result. So then we could say that maybe Bishul is unique, and that it's all about doing things that will bring about that result. And maybe all these different actions that the Gemara is getting at, it's a way of saying, maybe what that Gemara is telling us, that Gemara in Beitzah, is not just saying, oh, by the way, here's a bunch of things that you can do wrong in the kitchen on Shabbos. It's not just giving you a whole list of different malachas. Like the Gemara sometimes does, right? The Gemara sometimes says, you know, if you do this action, you're in violation of 8 different things. Just to make that kind of a point. So maybe that Gemara in Beitzah is saying that, right? That theoretically, if somebody gets involved with this environment on Shabbos, he could be doing all these different averos. Or the Gemara could be read differently. It could be read as saying, this is what Bishul is. Bishul is taking steps towards this culmination of cooked food, and all of these are part of that. So this is something, again, if you look in that Sefer Meshiv Nefesh, I was mentioning, as he notes as well, that we talked about a little bit a few weeks ago about the fact that there is a tour in Hilchos Shabbos called Grama. The Gemara in Shabbos Adaf Kochav tells us that a causational malacha is pater in Shabbos. What exactly that means and what exactly either half of that sentence means. What's called Grama? And what is the impact of pater? Does that mean it's mutter? Is it Nisa Drabanan? Is it mutter only Bitsarach? That's the whole discussion. But there is some discount if your malacha is done through Grama. So is there perhaps a case to be made that there is no such usage when it there's no such usage when it comes to Bishul, yeah, that maybe Bishul, its whole nature of the malacha is setting up a scenario that brings about a result. So what's Grama? It's all Grama. I'm smiling a little bit because there is a whole discussion in general, what does Grama mean in this area and other areas? Does Grama mean that something's going to happen on a time delay? Does it mean that you're causing one thing to happen and that will cause something else to happen? So, you know, there's an expression in English, because there was a cartoonist named Rube Goldberg, before all of our times, but Rube Goldberg used to make these cartoons about these very elaborate inventions, where he would do A, and A would have to push B, and B would provoke C, and C would not go to D, and eventually, after 25 steps, something very simple would take you to open up your window shade after pushing 27 different steps. So that's part of the question, is that what we're talking about when we talk about Grama? So a little bit of synergy here at the last semester. So I just received in the mail in the past week a sefer from a very chashuv Talmud Chacham in California who wrote a new volume on the Mo'adim. So he wrote a section on Hanukkah. So he has a section about the obligation of Ner Hanukkah, whether it's about the action or whether it's about bringing it about, what if you would have an elaborate system of lighting the menorah. So the title of the piece, I never saw this before in a halachic sefer, the title of the piece is Hebrew Sefer title piece is Chanukias Rube Goldberg. And if you would have a Rube Goldberg type of menorah where everything happens indirectly, so how would that affect your fulfillment? So, essentially, the same question comes up here. What does Grama mean? Does Grama mean things happen indirectly? It can't fully mean that because in Hilchos Shabbos we know that you're chayav for to gracia. If you cause something to happen definitely, so that's not considered to be a grumma. So you have to figure out what exactly a grumma is. It's a little bit of a different discussion. But is there perhaps room to say that perhaps bishul should be outside of this discussion anyway? That maybe bishul has its own unique definition, and all of bishul is about setting things in motion that will ultimately bring about a cooked item. And if that's the case, it may not have room to have such a leniency. And again, that can be taken together with the Merkabah Mishnah's understanding of what Sorcha HaBishul include, and therefore perhaps specifically when it comes to Bishul, we could understand that that's what the Gemara is saying, that Bishul is defined by any of these actions. So also very interesting and very noteworthy, if you saw the Marma Kalmus, was a reference to the Gemara in, finally the first time we refer to a Gemara actually in the third parak of Shabbos, where so many of the sugyas of Bishul are, Makira. And so the Gemara in Lamed Tes talks about the idea that cooking something, bechama, if you're going to use the sun to cook something, so then you are pater. It actually sounds like that's mutter, not just pater in the sense of not being chayav. So why are you pater for that? So what does Rashi say? Rashi says you're pater because ein derech bishul. And that, as Rav Moshe Feinstein points out in the Teshuva, that doesn't mean it's a malacha kol achar yad. It's a malacha that's done in an unusual fashion, because normally that would be an issur midrabanan. And here we don't seem to find an issur midrabanan. So what it sounds like it means is that that's simply not the malacha of bishul. So that does seem to put a strong maaser focus on the malacha, that it's not simply only about the result, because it's possible that if you cook something in the sun, you're going to get the ultimate result that's going to be identical to the result that you'd have otherwise. Now, it may depend on your definition of identical, and we know also that nowadays is a machlokas about whether microwaves are considered to be comparable to bishul b'chama or not. So one might argue that the food they cook in the microwave doesn't really taste like the food they did cook in the oven. So to say identical might be a little bit of a matter of judgment, but that's perhaps a question here. So if we are so interested in the result and anything that brings about the result, maybe this seems to focus us a little bit in the other direction and say it's more about the maisa. It's also especially relevant to us that the Achron and then go on to say that this is also where we have a tour of Bishul B'Kli Sheni, which we'll talk about separately, but the idea that something may bring about the same impact, but just because it's happening in a second Kli, so why should that make a difference? So some understand that that's also a factor of Derech Bishul, that Bishul has certain requirements for what it looks like, and this simply isn't that. I think Jonathan was up first in the...
So is there much of an explanation for, I mean, Rashi's Lashon, that it's not Kiderach? I mean,
so it's Kiderach like means different things in different contexts, as I think we've seen in other usages. So sometimes it means that you're doing the Malacha Shol Kiderach, and sometimes it means, which might be relevant, for example, I mean, we explained it a little bit differently when we talked about Borer, we saw that you find possibly such a distinction. Without going into a lot of detail about it, but in Borer, there are certain factors which will make Borer a mutter, not just us and Midrabanan. And some of the Rishonim explain it by usage of terms like not Kederach. So we had an explanation for that, Bishaito, but just for a brief reference now, it just shows that the term doesn't always mean the same thing. So sometimes it means you're doing Malacha, but you're doing Shalok Kederach. Shalok Kederach has a general Drabanan kind of thing. And sometimes it means the Malacha has a Tzura, and then if you're not following that surah, it's not the malacha, and that seems to be the case in this context.
So we seem not to be focused on the results, because cooking with the sun, it would produce the same...
That's the point, right? That's what it seems like. It sounds like, if that's the case, that it gives us that implication.
Another question is, what can something transfer from being derech
Like, let's say, yeah, 100 years from now,
yeah,
people...
Yeah, that is absolutely a discussion. So we'll get into that in more detail. You know, now this is just kind of an introductory discussion, so we talk about the specifics, so we'll get into that a little bit more, but that is absolutely a question. And that also, in terms of the other question, has nafkamina. We know, for example, cooking in a microwave has limited nafkamina to the Shabbos practically, because using a microwave on Shabbos is certainly going to involve all kinds of problems. So it's hard.
All light.
Right, and it's an electric appliance now. Yeah. So it's hard to get around a lot of the practical issues. But for example, it comes up in your previous issue of Bishul Akum, you know, whether or not using a microwave is considered to be Bishul Akum is a major issue that Posen talked about today. So all of these points are relevant to this general question of what is the relationship between the mice of cooking and the result of cooking. So now let's just try to focus for a few minutes. And if we run out of time, maybe we'll also add a little bit tomorrow, time permitted. But so what is the mice of cooking? Right? So we asked yesterday, I asked you to define the malacha of Bishul, and we got a couple of suggestions. It has to do with using heat to make food edible. There are those who argue that food should not be a part of the definition. And there are those who argue that improving should be the definition. And improving, we saw, has a little bit of weakness to it because we have to figure out whether or not that is the same thing as going from edible to non-edible. So let's talk a little bit about what the Maisa Ha'ezer of Bishul is. So the Rambam, in the beginning of the laws of Bishul, which are the ninth parak of Hilchos Shabbos, which you saw, those were on the Maamar Kamos. So the Rambam essentially lists three activities as being Bishul. What are the three? He talks about cooking food, and baking bread, and heating up water. Essentially, as if that's three categories that all share the space of Bishul. So as we discussed yesterday, we talked a little bit, and the Gemara kind of highlights this. If you had a chance to see the Gemara that's in Kol Gadol, and I endowed them at base, so that there is a little bit of crowding within this malacha, that the 11th malacha has a couple of avos apparently associated with it, but that we've seen throughout, that we have avos and toldos, so the toldos are subsets of the malacha, but even the top slot on the malacha can have a couple of different actions. There could be more than one thing, which is called an av, and still occupy only one space, making Hilchos Shabbos admittedly very confusing. Right? It's hard enough to figure out the difference between a toldo and an av, but then there is still apparently some difference than avos, that you can have multiple avos, which are all one av. So what's the difference between a tol and an av? And what's the difference between an av that gets its own slot and an av that doesn't get its own slot? So that's itself an additional question. It's very theoretical and complex. But within Bishul, within this 11th slot in the vending machine, right? So apparently you have a slot in the vending machine where you can put in different items there and you'll all be considered to be buying the same item no matter what. The same barcode can be used for different products that are similar enough. So what items, what malachos here could be on the same barcode? So to say, when the Rambam lists Bishul and Afia as two slots, so that we see, we talked about that yesterday, right? That there was some discussion as to what is the standard for a malacha, and that to say Afia should be a malacha only makes sense if you follow the view of the Haigon and Yerushalmi, that malachos are inclusive of that which was done in the Mishkan, not just construction, and therefore the lechem hapanim could be a model for malachos as well. But according to the more intuitive position that Rashi holds, so it's not really that there's any model of afia, it's just a model of bishul. So if you saw, right, the Gemara on Ayin Dali, which was on the Maamar Kamos, the Gemara addresses this. So at the top of Ayin Dali in the base, the ha'ofe, it's about six lines down. So Ofa Rav Papa, Shavak Tanididan Bishul Samamanim, Dahabu Mishkan, Vinakar Ofa. So it left out, this sounds like supportive of our intuitive position associated with Rashi and others, that we talk about the construction of the Mishkan. So the Gemara says straight out, how come our Mishnah left out Bishul, which actually was in the Mishkan, and instead says Ofer? So Tana Didon Sidur the Pas Nakat. Oh yeah, our Mishnah likes to tell us Sidur the Pas. So what does Sidur the Pas mean in real life? So according to our this position, Rashi's position, it doesn't really mean anything. It's essentially a mnemonic. Right, so Rashi over here says, "V'nagar Ofa the Lo Shayech Malachas HaMishkan Klal." Ofa has nothing whatsoever to do with Malachas HaMishkan. You see his strong opinion that it's all about the construction. Sidur Depas Shehiskel Bo Nakat V'Ofa Makom Bishul Samanimu Duhu Bishul Depas. Now, apparently, it's just a way of organizing information here. It's kind of a mnemonic, so it flows to call these first 11 Malachas Sidur Depas, but it doesn't really have any connection to what happened in the Mishkan. So, fine. So, our Gemara is essentially acknowledging Bishul and Ofeh as two separate categories of the same thing. Two separate forms of the Malacha that occupy the same space. But the Rambam is putting in a third one here. So, what's the space for a third one? Heating up water. So, where does the third category come in? If you want to assume that these are really different categories, that's a question you could ask. You could say that, you know, the Rambam's just telling you halacha. He's not so interested in over here. Actually, he's not so interested in creating new halachic categories. But we tend to assume that his language is a little more precise. All right. So when he says this in the opening line to the section of Bishul Parakas, how precise is he being? Ha'ofer kegrover is chayev, echer ha'ofer es hapas. Oh, Mavashu as Hamaychal, was as Hamavonim, Oh, Hamachanim, as Hamayim, Hakol, in your Echad.
Could be that he's just giving examples. He's saying it's a good bookmark.
Okay, this Rambam just generated a daf from Kasubas. That is a little freaky. Okay. I feel bad putting it back in because I'm making it to a bookmark. All right, leave it out here. So is he trying to say that these are worthy of mention because they have their own category? So this is something that you mentioned before, but we'll say for this is something that he talks about in the very first chapter. And again, you could say this question doesn't have to bother you. You could say he's just telling you practical applications of what would be included. But is there perhaps some difference between the three? Or again, if we already have a difference between the two, but is water itself a difference? So one difference, as you notice there, is the shear. And how much water you have to cook to be chayiv is different, is measured differently than the grogeris, that's the standard for food. So that might merit a special mention. But there might be something else as well. So now let's go back to this question of what does bishul mean? What does it mean to be mevashel or something? So that is part of what the Gemara and Klal Gadol addresses in general. It's hard to know how much of these Gemaras and Klal Gadol, so in Daf and Gimel we have that Mishnah, this is all the Malachas. And then for a little while the Gemaras go and comment a little bit on the various Malachas that are listed. So it's interesting to pay attention to just what was considered to be the most relevant details that Chazal put here about the Malachas immediately following the Mishnah. Why they put things in different places, but immediately following the Mishnah. So, what halacha are we told about Bishul? Just this one. That what? That Amar V'acha Barav Avira Hayman Deshada Sichta La Asuna Chayiv Mishum Mevashel. If you take a tent peg and you throw it into the fire, you throw it into an oven, Bishul. So says the Gemara. Well, Pshita. Okay, it seems to be obvious to me that I throw something into the fire, it's Bishul. Really, it's so pashut. It's not food, right? So that could have been a surprise to us.
It might be the Kamash Balan.
But it's not, though, right? Because the Gemara is going to say something else. But, you know, it's interesting that that's why I'm saying that it's interesting it's so pashut, because it's not so pashut. But okay, yeah, pashut. But Mahu Detema, you would have thought the Shure Mana Kamachave, that your intent in doing this is to strengthen the item, is to harden the item. So, Kamash Malan, the Mirfa Rafi, the Hadr Kamit. So what's the kamash malan? That first it softens this way. Now you throw the wet peg into the fire, so the water heats up, and that softens the peg, and then eventually the water is going to evaporate, and then it's going to be a hard peg.
So what exactly would you have thought was the...
So we'll see in a second, it's a little bit of a question what that back and forth is, but apparently, and just the Gemara has another example, like the Samar Abba Barav Huna, Haiman de Irsuch Kufra, if you have tar, and you heat it up, Chayiv Mishum Bevashal, once again, that's Bishul, Pshita Maritema Keva Dahada V'ikusha, Emelo, since it's eventually going to harden up, so maybe you shouldn't be Chayiv Kamashma on that. So Arye asks, so what exactly is the Chiddush? What exactly is the Maskana here? So it sounds like this Gemara is telling us a couple of interesting things. Right, so yes, it considers it obvious that these non-food items are Bishul. That's a little bit of a surprise to us, but not to the Gemara, fine. But also, the Gemara is working off a premise. It's really interesting, because that part is obvious, but there's another premise that wasn't so well. What's the premise? The premise is that what is Bishul, according to this Gemara? Using heat to...
Make it harder?
Well, it sounds like it means using heat to soften it. Right? Well, but it sounds like the point is softening, because the Gemara's conclusion seems to be that the reason it's still Bishul, even though it ends up hard, is because for that it's soft. Now, the reason I threw the word seems into the sentence a couple times is because the Lechem Mishnah comments that the Rambam in Tes Vav, over here, Tes Halacha Vav, so the Rambam includes, in this definition, our Gemara seems to be telling us straight out that softening any item through heat is Bishul. So the Rambam paskins like that, but he also throws in that using the fire to harden the item is also Bishul. So that seems a little bit like it's against our Gemara, right? Why does it seem like it's against our Gemara?
You say that as an
excuse. Because that would be a valid excuse. You would think it would be a valid excuse.
Well, because, right, you would exclude
it.
Right, it sounds like, what? Bishul, but it's going to end up hard. No, it's soft first. Oh, okay, fine, so it's Bishul. So then why is Rambam telling you that if you're trying to harden something up, that's also Bishul? So the way the Lechem Mishnah explains it is that it's different than the way you would have thought the Gemara. You would have thought the Gemara is saying it's only about softening, and that includes situations where it ultimately is hardened but softened before that. And the Lechem Mishnah reads it a little bit differently in order to explain the Rambam. It says that if all that happened was that you take an item that is hard and you throw it in the fire, it gets harder, so then, okay, that would maybe not be Bishul. But if you really change something from soft to hard, or hard to soft, then that's where Bishul comes in. So here, you could have thought that these cases, you take a hard item, you throw it in the fire, it gets harder, that's not really significant. So the Gemara tells you, no, it goes with a phase of softness in between, so it is shifting from one phase to the next. So you could have read the Gemara saying ultimately it's all about softening, and the Rambam will say essentially that it's all about flipping it from one phase to the next, either soft to hard or hard to soft. And the chiddush of the Gemara is that it passes through that other phase, and it's not just a question of degree, so that's what it means. But essentially what emerges from our Gemara is that you have a definition now of Bishul, that Bishul means using fire to not stam prepare something, but to prepare it in a certain way, either through softening or hardening. Now, which one of those, softening or hardening, which one of those is relevant to water?
None.
And so then that comes out that maybe water deserves its own mention, because water is really its own separate track. Water has a definition of Bishul that is fundamentally different than the definition that we have by solids. Josh?
The way things are hardened or softened is by heating up the water inside of it. That's what Rashi points out, is that you're heating up the water.
So that's an interesting point. So you're saying that really water is the controlling element of everything. That it's all about the water, and that it's always about heating up water, and the fact that something gets softened or hardened is the way we see that the water has been heated up. It's a fascinating point. I wonder if that really changes anything. I'd say that really all cooking is about that. to think about how that would have an effect on other things. It sounds like, practically speaking, looking at the less complex picture of the world, that solids cooking means one thing, and for water it means something else, which we know has practical implications. We haven't discussed them yet, but we know from halakhah l'maaseh in our lives that there are major practical differences between solids and liquids as far as Bishul is concerned, and we'll, God willing, get to it. But here, so we see this difference emerging, not just as kind of a quirk or as a detail, but as the fundamental process is really different than just a second ago defined Bishul as softening, or maybe for the Rambam, hardening too. So water is neither of those things. So water has a different definition. So that could be very important for other practical implications. We'll just point out one that we will discuss in the Sefer, very important issue. So the Rambam says that one of the details that the Rambam says in that section of Hilchos Shabbos, which is Tes Gimel, very important point, he says a klal that one is putter for cooking if what? Right, the last line of Hilchos Gimel, Hamavashu ha'or davar shahaya mavushul bo kol tzorcho, o davar she'eno tzorch bishul klal. Two different things, which may be the same thing. But let's say it's already been cooked enough that there's no need for any more cooking. Or there never was any need for cooking. It's something that doesn't need cooking at all. So this is what was relevant when Yosef was asking the question before. I thought this maybe you could maybe question, why do we distinguish between something that just doesn't need cooking because it's either cooked or not requiring of cooking, and something which does need cooking, but the cooking is going to happen regardless of you. So apparently there is a difference that goes to our Hilchos Shabbos Maisa focus, presumably, that the fact that it's ultimately going to happen doesn't necessarily take away the fact that you're doing it yourself right now. But in terms of what's called Bishul, so apparently part of the definition of Bishul is that it has to be done to something that needs it, either because it needs cooking at all, or it has cooking left to be done. So what is the halachic implication of that phrase, the last part of the Rambam, something that doesn't need cooking at all? So does that mean it can be eaten raw? So cooking is nice, but you can still eat it without the cooking? Or does it mean, no, it's not about whether it can be eaten raw. When he says it doesn't need cooking at all, he means the cooking doesn't improve anything ki hu zeh. There's no benefit to further cooking. But if it could be eaten anyway, but cooking makes it much better, or a little better, maybe that's still Bishul. That's a huge practical difference. That's a very big deal. So we say that you're putter for cooking something that doesn't need it. Do we mean because it's edible, or because the cooking's not going to help you in any way? So this was a major machlokas ha'achronim. So the Merkavas HaMishnah mentioned basically for the third time today. The Mekevus HaMishnah understands that it means that it can be eaten raw. It can be eaten raw, and therefore you don't need to cook it, so then there's no chiyah for Bishul. And Aryeh, so he points out that this is essentially the halacha we find by Bishul Akum, right? In that sense, the parallel to Bishul Akum, that food that can be eaten raw is not subject to the halachas of Bishul Akum. But the Shahar Tzion disagrees. The Shahar Tzion says, Mishnah Berurah says, that we have a very solid proof that that's not true. Right, we can bring you a very solid proof that there is an item that can be eaten raw, and yet we know that there's a chiyah for cooking it. What's that? Water. Water, clearly, in most countries, hopefully, can be eaten raw. And yet, the Rambam clearly stated that you're chayav for cooking it. So it sounds like a slam dunk proof against the Mekevus HaMishnah's position.
Unless you say that it's a different category.
Bingo. Yes. Right, so says the Prima Gaudim, quoting Ari Yisrael, that no, you can't bring a proof from water to solids. They're two different systems. And they are two different malachos, essentially, under the heading of Bishul. Two different malachos that are occupying the space of the 11th malacha. There are essentially three malachas in that slot. There's baking, afia. There's bishul food, or other such things. And there's bishul water. And bishul water gets a different slab because it has different rules. So when it comes to bishul food, it means softening. And when it comes to bishul water, it means heating. And therefore, the fact that water applies even when it can be eaten raw, that doesn't tell us anything about food. All right?
Didn't you say that it's the same slot, but yet it only applies if there is a raw state? Meaning water, there is no raw or not raw, really?
Well, why don't we say that cold water is essentially comparable to raw?
It's not really comparable.
Say that water you could drink without cooking, that's what raw means.
I need to drink water that's been cooked also.
Right, that's been cooked.
I'm saying it's not nothing in it has changed.
Well, that right. That's, you know, essentially that's where we're going to find having an impact for local mice, and we'll talk about, maybe we haven't studied yet, but we know from practical life that in bishul achar bishul is where this is going to come up. But you're right, the fact that water doesn't change makes it different. But maybe that's also reflective of essentially a whole different structure here, that food, bishul means a physical change that comes along with the heat. And water, it's only the temperature. And therefore, that makes it not a good basis for Araya in terms of what will be considered cooking for other things. Hi.
In addition to that, if Araya is convenient,
yes.
The term,
yeah,
like
the line,
if
Son of Lions.
Yeah, exactly.
It's my first name, yeah.
If Kalashin Mead, we care about that, so nobody would call water raw, I think. It's very difficult
True.
To apply such a category.
But why not? Why wouldn't they say that?
Also, I mean, for one reason, because whether it got boiled or it didn't get boiled, it's going to be the same form, it's going to look the same.
That's one reason.
You'd also say that you think of raw as coming from something, I suppose, or it's a produce of something, whether an animal or from the ground.
I would have guessed the reason you don't see it is because raw has a connotation of unprepared. And that food, which really needs to be cooked to be prepared, is called raw. And that's where you find in the food context this distinction. And that water, which doesn't really have such a distinction. So the language of raw is not invoked, which maybe is what you mean when you say there's no such thing as raw water. But theoretically, there could have been such a state. And that's presumably where you find this difference. So let's just quickly review what we spoke about today. So we talked about the structure between the initial act, the maisa, and the result, and to what extent are they related to each other. Quickly talked about the whole rashash mechaschinuch, about putting food on the oven towards the end of Shabbos that will be cooked after Shabbos. We talked about the malacha of hagasa, the fact that there is a specific issue of kiruv bishul, as Rabbi Tal explains. Talked a little bit about how that's different from Mizria, and then the question of, so what would happen if somebody comes and does a gas in the middle? Presumably the initial guy is still chayiv, in contrast to a situation where somebody else took it off the oven and then put it back on himself. So what's the difference? And we talked about the nuanced difference between the Eglei Tal and the Shisha Shabbos as far as they understood that, and we talked about the other actions, that the, including Hagasa, that the Gemara talks about in Beitza, and the Machlokas Rishonim, whether they're different Malachas, such as Mavir involved, or the way the Rambam understands it, that they're all Mitzorche HaBishul, and therefore that's all considered to be the Malacha of Bishul. We saw that somewhat similar to what we find by Zriya, the Rambam says putting in water is Achiyuv Zriya, and that was the Machlokas, where the Mekevs and Mishnah was on the other side, in terms of understanding why, is it because it sprouts or because there is a general idea of preparing for a malacha? And then maybe here, Bishul uniquely has that idea that the whole malacha is about bringing it about, and that may also affect the question of grumma, whether grumma is pure by Bishul as it is by other things. Then we talked a little bit about the idea of Kuchain and about Tolda, about Kuchain, about Chama, and about whether the p'tur there is because it's not derech bishul, and how that seems to say it's mutter completely, and how that reflects something of a focus on the maisa specifically. And then we started talking about what that maisa is, and about the Rambam's three categories, and the question of why do we need three categories, and the fact that bishul and afia, we can see them as being different from each other, but that heating water, it's not clear from the Gemara where that gets a third basis. So we saw the Gemara in Daf Ayin Daled, which talks about apparently softening is a definition, how the Rambam extends it to hardening also is sort of Lechem Mishnah's explanation of how the Gemara could be read as saying that too, even though it seems like it's saying the opposite. And then we saw that through that, it comes out that water has to be taken as a whole third category because it's not relevant to either softening or hardening. And if we say that it's a third category, that could be relevant to the Machlokas and the Kevasa Mishnah and the Achronim quoted Mishar Tzion as to whether the Rambam's exemption for something that doesn't need cooking, does that mean it doesn't need cooking at all? Nothing, no improvement comes through cooking, or just that it can be eaten raw like Bishul Akum? So there the Mekeves Mishnah says it just means it can be eaten raw. And the Sarasian quoted Achronim who argued based on the Raya from cooking water. And the Primogadim quoting Aryeh says that essentially that's not necessarily a relevant Raya, because water is its own category of Bishul, and that's perhaps what the Rambam is telling us. Okay, God willing, tomorrow we have to talk about Tezriya and Achodesh, and we'll see if we can throw in a few other things as well.